We were discussing Muni Sutta. Muni Sutta is available in the Sutta Nipata, which is one of the books of the Kuddaka Nikaya. So the Kuddaka Nikaya actually contains around 15 books. Among them, Sutta Nipata is one of the very interesting books, which contains very, very interesting suttas and most familiar suttas as well, like Mangala Sutta, Ratana Sutta, Kalaha Vivada Sutta, and this Praga Sutta. And today actually what we are discussing, Muni Sutta. So all these are very interesting suttas which are included in the Sutta Nipata. And it is recognized these are the early teachings of the Buddha. As you know, as Buddha started his teaching career in a way. So he started very much like from these very interesting and fairly concise, deep type of suttas. And later it seems like he started elaborating in detail. Now, these suttas are very concise and consisting mostly the verses. And Muni Sutta actually gives us a kind of a clear perspective about who a saint is, who the Buddha is. And by calling a Muni, by calling a saint, a Buddha. So what are the salient characteristics? What are the interesting characteristics of that person? So that is what actually very interestingly developed or interestingly discussed in this sutta. And we are going verse by verse. And last week actually we discussed about this verse. Ekan charantang muning appamantang. So appamattang. So ekan charantang. So that is one of the very interesting part of the Muni, where he lives alone, he behaves alone, and even though he sometimes being with the crowd, still he feels alone. Being alone is not a punishment, rather he prefers seclusion. So this solitude practice, this seclusion is part of the path, and sometimes we need to have such kind of seclusion. So internally mind may sometimes yearn for seclusion. So away from the typical hassle of the, say, the city and the family life. So time to time, coming out of that hassle and being alone, but still not feeling lonely, rather feeling quite confident, feeling being with oneself, and that oneself also well connected with the whole universe. So that kind of a very confident, fulfilling type of feeling is something encouraged in the Dhamma path. And here we understand it's culmination, that is as a Samma Sambuddha, how Buddha is behaving or how he maintain his characteristics. So these are the things very interestingly discussed in this Muni Sutta. And today we can get into the next two verses where Buddha mentioned, Yo ogahame tambo ri vidijayati yassin pare vacha pariyantam vadanti tang vitaragam susamahitindriyam tangvapi dhira munin vedayanti. Now the whole practice is very concisely embedded in sometimes in single verse. So that is the very interesting part of this whole sutta. Each verse is trying to convey a kind of a message, but each and every word has a deeper meaning, representing the whole path sometimes, representing the whole practice sometimes. Now, yo ogahani. Now, oga typically means the floods. So different kinds of, say, sensuality, different kinds of other defilements typically are called oga, and that is fairly equal to the asava, the influences. The oga, kama oga, bhava oga, ditti oga, avijja oga. So these are the four different kinds of floods that we recognize available, explained in the Dhamma. Kama oga. So sometimes we are very much bound to the sensual gratification. very much bound to various sensual activities, sense pleasures, and we all have that sense desire. So as a result of the sense desire, we constantly keep on looking at beautiful sceneries, constantly hearing beautiful music, maybe going through pleasant odors, trying to taste delicacies, and then going through some pleasant sensations. And apart from that, sometimes we like to acquire a position and maybe a title, reputation, a place, a praise, and all those kinds of things. Actually, we can say are part of this sensual pleasures. So some are actually material and some are fairly psychological. So psychologically also we need kind of a place. We need some kind of a satisfaction. We need some kind of a gratification, and that too can be considered under the sensual gratification. So this sensual gratification is one part of organ, one type of flood, is sometimes being swept away. And on the other hand, there are few others like bhava organ. So we constantly want to become. I want to become a doctor, I want to become an engineer, I want to become a teacher, I want to become a monk, I want to become a saint, I want to become an arahant. So likewise, we all have either wholesome or unwholesome kind of aspirations. And the present moment, we are not that happy, but we are yearning, we are expecting, we are anticipating to become someone different. Currently, I am someone, and different from that someone, now I want to become someone different. So this kind of feeling is actually available, and this kind of yearning is sometimes available, this kind of an expectation is sometimes available, wish is sometimes available, ambition is available, and that is what actually motivates us, that is what actually driving us. So that is also necessary. So even in the Dhamma path, Buddha mentioned, and sometimes you need to have such an ambition, that is from which actually we are getting a kind of a motivation, kind of a momentum. But on the other hand, when one is continuing one's path, so this ambition, this motivation, expectation, all become fairly calmed down, relaxed. So the bhava tanha become less and less. Rather, you simply like to be, rather than trying to become. You simply enjoy the present moment, trying to be 100% fully with it, wholeheartedly with it, without expecting another moment, without expecting a future experience. Currently, present moment is fully satisfied. Present moment is fairly welcomed. Present moment is fairly acknowledged, not wishing even a different moment. So this kind of a very interesting momentary experience, sometimes helpful to avoid too much expectation, to avoid bhava tanha. So the next one is avijja, ignorance, thinking that there is a person here, thinking that there is a self here, an individual here, a person here. So likewise, we all have that the wrong understanding, avijja, ignorance, and that is something that constantly available within ourselves, and it may be attributed either to the body, even to the perception, to the feelings, to various formations, and to our sense experience, to different experiences. We are attributing a self, a person, an individual. So that is also a part of the auger, what we call as the flood. And ditti auger is another, we can say, another subgroup of avijja, ignorance. That is where we have various kinds of wrong views, thinking about the world, thinking that world is eternal or are going to be end, or this body has a self, etc., etc. So different kinds of various views. That is also another kind of flood. So your oga honey, so that means so there is no such kind of auga available, floods available, and even if it is available, sometimes this mind is unwavering. So any kind of such floods can't move the mind now. So one who remains steadfast like a pillar at a ford. Tambori vabi jayati. So tambo means a pillar, a strong pillar. So which is capable of withstanding vari. Vari means the water, the flood. So that means the mind is not now moved by the internal influxes, internal auger, internal floods, internal kilesas, the defilements. So the mind is now maintaining or showing some amount of stability. It is not carried away by various defilements. It is no more becoming a victim of various defilements. So sometimes we can understand, okay, sometimes say we are meditating, we are capable of maintaining a defilement-free, hindrance-free mind time to time. But some other time, we are being driven by maybe sensual desire. We are being driven by hatred. We are being driven by laziness. We are being driven by lust. We are being driven by various doubts. So that means we are under the influence of auger. So we have been subjected to auger, a flood. We become a victim of that auger. But here, when one becomes a muni, an arahant, so his mind is not like that. So his mind is like a strong pillar, which is unmoved, which is quite stable, steady. It is not moved from various defilements. And then yasmin pare vacha pariyantam vadanti tang nitaragam susamahitindriya. So even when someone is speaking in a provocative way, more abusive way, still, so this person, there is no wavering in his mind. So he is devoid of lust and he is with concentrated mind or well collected mind. Susamahit indriya, so the indriya, the faculties are well collected, well attuned, fairly balanced. Susamahit, so the mind is well balanced. Mind is well collected, is not scattered. So different skills or different indriyas, faculties are available in the mind. So here Buddha give us a kind of a picture. So those different faculties are in a very interesting equilibrium. Not suppressing anything or not overwhelming anything, but they are in a very good blend, very good coordination. Tangva api dhira muning vedayanti. So this is a state of the mind which a muni has. So you can see how beautifully these things are explained. So these are fairly scientific, because the mind of the saint, mind of the Buddha, mind of the Arahant is showing a very interesting equilibrium. It is not agitated. It is not frustrated. And is not bewildered by various defilements or lust or greed or such kind of desires. But in a very interesting, stable, stability, unwavering type of a mind. And that is the muni. So he is not being affected by various praise, maybe various blames. So his mind is quite steady. And then we go to the next verse. Yove tittato, tittato, yove tittato, pasaranga ujjum, jiguchati kamehi papakehi, vimansamano visamang samancha, tangvapi dhira muning vedayanti. Now the words here are very ancient in a way, not sometimes frequently heard, but giving a very interesting and deeper meaning. Yove tithattu, pasarangva ujjum. Now this ujjum, so that is a kind of a shuttle being used in the ancient kind of looming industry. So it seems to be a straight component. straight instrument, so there is no any kind of flaws in it, defects in it. It's a very straight, precisely made equipment. So like that kind of a shuttle whose mind is inwardly firm, titattu. Titattu represents the stability. So mind is steady. Mind has stopped. Mind remains calm. Mind remains still. There is no wavering. There is no kind of shivering. There is no movement going this and to this, that direction or to that direction. There is no upliftments or the going down. So oscillations are not available. So it is steady. Titattu. So the mind becomes completely steady and still. Like that shuttle. So that shuttle has the kind of a very precise measurement. So like that, the mind also become fairly steady. Jiguchati kamehi papakehi. Now he actually, actions that are evil. So he don't want to do any kind of evil. So he feel disgusted about them. Now say for example, now say a worldly person. So he may be not killing another animal being, not because that he don't feel kind of, he is feeling disgusted about it, but sometimes maybe from the laws, regulations, so that is being prohibited. But here even the laws are not there, so the arahants have that inner ethical shyness or ethical shamefulness to kill an animal. And similar to the other, all the precepts, so he internally have that shamefulness, that means to do any kind of wrong activity, that he is now shameful. To do any kind of wrong activity, he has the moral dread. So moral shame and moral dread are part of his character. Hiriyanottappa. So that is very interesting part. Actually, you don't need to wait till you become an arahant to have these qualities. Actually, when you are developing mindfulness and clear comprehension, one output or one outcome of that whole process is this. That is Hiriyanottappa. If you can remember that when we were discussing Sati Sampajanya Sutta, so there Buddha explained, when Sati and Sampajanya are available, mindfulness and clear comprehension are available, so that mind actually is equipped with moral shame and moral dread. Sati and Sampajanya is one of the result of that combination. So even sometimes people start meditating, developing mindfulness. At the beginning, they don't have much of the sila, much of the restrainment or any kind of good conduct. But slowly, if you are developing proper mindfulness, if you are properly bringing the clear comprehension into the picture, now both of them, that means mindfulness and clear comprehension, starts going hand in hand. And one result of that practice is the moral shame and moral dread. Hiriyanottappa becomes evident more, it becomes more and more available to that person. So previously he was negligent about certain activities and he don't care about them, but now he is careful about it. So for example, say you are a person who used to talk harsh manner. You are a person who used to drink alcohol. Or you are negligent about your behavior. So all these things now are being questioned. So that as you are developing the practice, mindfulness and clear comprehension are taking upper hand. At that level, actually you can't continue your old habits. So your old habits are under the scrutiny. And you require to abandon whatever the wrong habits, bad habits, or bad activities, either bodily bad activities or wrong activities, or verbal wrong activities, wrong words, statements. And even the mind now expects some kind of a scrutiny, expects some kind of a purification.
So he has that internal kind of inner shamefulness, moral shamefulness for the wrong activities. So that means he is careful. He is having a very careful attention. He investigates. Before he conducts a bodily activity, he investigates. Before he talks something, he investigates. And when he is thinking, he investigates. So likewise, so you can see the investigation, carefulness, attentiveness, and expecting some sort of a precision is something that is going to be developed. Isaman samanta, so things are going up and down every time. So even and unevenness are part of the life. So he investigates the situation. So when he is going through maybe a gain, he investigates that. When he is going through some loss, he investigates that. When he experiences some kind of praise, he investigates that. When he experiences some kind of bodily experience or mental experience, he investigates that. So likewise, so it's a kind of investigation is continuous, and he is careful about what he is conducting. He is careful about the bodily activities, careful about the verbal activities and the mental activities. Hangvapi dihira munin edayanti. So this is the characteristics of the Buddha, characteristics of the Arahant, characteristics of the Muni, a saint. So who is now going through this kind of a very careful type of life, a pure type of life? Actually, this is part of the practice. As you are developing mindfulness, as you are developing various other bodhyanga enlightenment factors, so one of their characteristic is the purification. So you are carefully analyzing, investigating what is useful to yourself, what is harmful to yourself, what is really necessary and what is not necessary. What are the beneficial ones and what are the harmful ones? So that is why Buddha sometimes mentioned in the Nagarupa Sutta with the venture. So sati as a dowarika, sati as a gatekeeper. So the function of the gatekeeper is to allow only the legitimate person to go in. And he will stop, obstruct unnecessary, unlawful person to go in. So therefore mindfulness has that capacity for only encouraging the necessary, good, harmless, beneficial things. And always abandoning what is harmful, unnecessary, defiled things. Api dovariko bhikkhave ariyasavako savajjam pajahati anavajjam bhaveti. Suddhang atthanam pariharati. So Buddha mentioned mindfulness as a gatekeeper is now functioning, going through a kind of a purification process. There are constantly is abandoning wrong things, wrong activities, but is encouraging the correct activities, correct involvement, further development of the necessary qualities, necessary characteristics, skills necessary. And as a result of that, mind become more and more purified, more and more steadfast, more and more clean, clear, and free from defilements. So this is the nature that we may be going through even before we become an Arahant. As we get into the practice, slowly this purification process starts. And you start investigating even what you are doing. And why, how you are living. So what are the ethics? What are the behaviors? And what you are maintaining as your, livelihood. So all these things are coming under a very careful investigation, careful scrutiny. And sometimes you may have to do a certain adjustments. So for example, you are associating so many people, so much of friends. And sometimes you are participating to unnecessary arguments. participating to unnecessary parties, gatherings, socializing. So as you are developing the path, so your mindfulness, your clear comprehension start questioning you, start challenging you, start proposing you, so what is the need of this? Are they really necessary? Are all these things necessary? Or are they really harmful? So likewise, so you are going through kind of a purification process, your own behavior now becomes somewhat changed, somewhat adjusted according to the path, according to the Dhamma. So that has to happen naturally. So when it is happening, when the mindfulness, their comprehension, internal, good qualities are requesting such kind of a change, so we have to abide by that. We need to become humble to that. So we have to obey that ethical request coming from the mind. Then a purification is more available. So you become more soft, you become more innocent, you become more genuine, and you become more, intelligent or wise. And now you are further developing the path. You are maintaining the mind which is free from defilements, maintaining your mind fairly free, fairly pure. So then you are very much like purifying yourself. So its ultimate result is one becoming arahant, one becoming a muni. He has come to the complete purification, he has achieved the complete purification, and that is what actually explained in this sutta verse by verse. So what are the salient features of that completely enlightened or fully enlightened being, that muni? So what are his characteristics? How his mind behaves? So these are the things actually explained in this sutta. And with that note, I like to conclude today's Dhamma sermon. Now I like to open the session for questions.
Yes, Bhante. Sorry, Bhante. We have 5 questions today.
Right.
First question is question number 1 of 5 is mindful walking. Dear Bhante, this is regarding my walking practice and Bhante's answer recently to a similar question I have as well. When I do walking practice, I can establish mindfulness on the sensations of soles within 10 to 15 minutes. This became possible after more than a year's practice. I can observe the details of the touch and the pressure of the weight distribution on my soles, hot and cold nature, etc. Sometimes the observations naturally go to the walking process itself and the movements of the body. I don't know if I should keep refining my focused attention on the soles or should I let the attention go anywhere in the body the mind prefers. What is the reason sometimes mindfulness establishes on deep penetrated observations and other times at the surface level of mere walking? Thank you for your kind explanation, Bhante, with metta. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, I think so these both approaches are correct and they have to be supported at various times. So sometimes you have to carefully focus your attention and carefully investigate, and you are going to a kind of a minimalist view and discarding all unnecessary conventional information, signs, and you are only approaching to the very precise, very subtle phenomena which are beyond the words, beyond the concepts. What you are experiencing is very a direct experience. So that direct experience is your feeling, you are experiencing, and you are now analyzing it very, very carefully, precisely. And that is necessary. But on the other hand, sometimes, as you correctly mentioned, sometimes we get the overall picture and we step back and looking at the whole overview of the whole situation. That is also another part of the practice. So sometimes we call it as meta-awareness, where about the situation you get another perspective, a second perspective. Like you are no more a fully involved person, rather you are an outsider. So both are necessary. So that is why sometimes you are going through that overview type of experience, where It is not that you are walking, it is the mere body walking or various kind of bodily movements are happening, and there is no I making, mind making, etc. And it is mere process going on. Now you are getting a perspective, a kind of outsider's perspective. Parato look, the outsider's perspective. But on the other hand, when you are carefully analyzing arising and passing away, how these subtle phenomena are behaving, so you need to focus your attention very precisely to those subtle phenomena, minute details, and you need to investigate how they are really behaving. So that is also necessary. Therefore, time to time you can select both these perspectives, both these approaches, and therefore you can't discard any of them. Both are part of the practice.
Question number 2 of 6. This is on mindful walking. Dear Bhante, thanks to your valuable guidance, I managed to develop a practice during the last few years where I feel very calm and relaxed after a mindfulness session. My question is regarding observing thoughts during the walking practice. My walking happens quite well with the minimum inner chatter and most of the time effortlessly and auto mode during a session. If there is not much distraction, is it the right time to watch thoughts while walking? Appreciate if Bhante can explain this a bit and if there's a difference compared to sitting practice and walking practice when it comes to observing the thoughts. With metta, that's the end of the question.
No, I don't think that there is any difference between while you are observing thoughts, while in sitting and while in walking. There is no such difference. You are simply practicing the mindfulness on various thoughts, various sensations, or rather various feelings, maybe various perceptions happening in the mind. So that is why when you are approaching Cittanupassana, Dhammanupassana, there is no any particular recommended posture. Throughout the whole day, you need to observe. That is how actually the practice become part of you, part of your whole life. It's no more simply you are limiting your practice only to a sitting, only to a walking. Rather, now from the moment that you wake up till you go to sleep, so you are trying to be careful of what you think or what the mind is going through. What are the emotions available? What are the thoughts available? What are the defilements available? How mind is behaving? So likewise, so a kind of a constant monitoring process is going on. And at the beginning, it feels like you are doing it deliberately. And sometimes it may be a little difficult and a little tiresome. But later, it becomes more natural, effortless. And it doesn't produce any kind of friction. So the environment or the atmosphere of the mind become more and more available to you. Very much like you are fully aware of what is the mind is thinking. You are fully aware of what the mind is going through. You are fully aware of various kinds of feelings. And it becomes quite readily available. It is not that you are purposely, deliberately trying to focus on something and to analyze it, to investigate that. So that is the initial early part of the practice, but later it becomes quite natural that you are naturally observing the mind. Say for example, while walking, you started experiencing various sensations at your soles. Different sensations are there and you are experiencing them. And so that is a kind of a deliberate, intentional type of practice, and you start with that. No, nothing to worry, no problem. But later, naturally, it becomes more natural, more ongoing, and you don't need to intentionally, deliberately pay your attention, but the mind itself is doing it, and your participation is less and less. Now you can take the back seat, allow the mind to continue its own practice. And later, automatically, mind may look at the mind itself. So if there is tension, so you will report it. If there is a lustful thought, then you may report it. If there is an angry thought, you may report it. If there is a jealousy thought, you may report it. Even sometimes without knowing that you are doing Cittanupassana or Dhammanupassana, so certain skills of Cittanupassana, Dhammanupassana is now available to you. You are slowly developing such skills. that is more natural. So rather than we purposely putting ourselves into a framework, thinking, okay, now I have to switch to Cittanupassana or Dhammanupassana, slowly, naturally, we are evolving our practice to that level. And naturally, we are sitting and watching the mind, walking and watching the mind, standing and watching the mind, while lying down, we are watching the mind. That is becoming a part of your practice, part of your life itself.
Question number 3 of 6. This is a general question, and it's going to really test my pronunciation of Sinhala, English, and Pali. Dear Venerable Swami Mahansa, my question is regarding the first sermon of the Blessed One. And although we are all fascinated by this great sermon, I still struggle to comprehend and remember the most important meanings of the words around the Four Noble Truths. Much merits if Swami Mahansa can explain the following 4 words and what the Blessed One meant by them. So, Dukkhang Arya Satchang Panyayanti.
Parinyayanti.
Parinyayanti. Dukkha Samudaya Arya Satchang Pahatabbanti. Dukkha Nirodho Arya Satchang Satchakatabbanti. Dukkha Nirodha Gamini Patipada Arya Satchang Bhavetabbanti.
Much merits.
Bhavetabbanti. That's the end of the question.
This is the way each and every say noble truth have to be approached, have to be looked at. Say dukkha satcha, the noble truth of suffering, so that is something that we need to fully comprehend, fully understand. So it is that is what actually we are doing by going through this whole vipassana practice, through the mindfulness practice, through the satipatthana practice. That is what we are doing. Say when we are doing kayanupassana, say we are investigating again and again about the body. When we are doing Vedanupassana, we are investigating again and again about the various feelings. When we are going to Cittanupassana, Dhammanupassana, we are investigating our whole mind and all the other aggregates again and again. So this is a kind of an investigation, trying to fully comprehend what's really going on. We are going to have a Yathabhuta Jnana Dasana, seeing things as they truly are. So this is what expected by the Buddha for the first noble truth. Dukkhang Arya Satchang Parinyaya. So you have to fully comprehend the first noble truths. So the first noble truth is talking about the suffering. So this suffering is nothing but the 5 clinging aggregates. Panchupadana Kandatisa Vachaniya. So dukkha means the 5 clinging aggregates. So how the suffering, how the dukkha, how the unsatisfactoriness arise is because when we are attached, when we are grasped to the form aggregate, when we are grasped to the feeling aggregate, when we are grasping the perceptions aggregate, when we are grasping the formations aggregate, when we are grasping the consciousness aggregate, so that is what we call as the suffering. But in the Satipatthana practice, we are doing this investigation, thorough investigation of all these attachments, all these graspings, all these aggregates. And that is what expected by telling Parinyayam, that we have to fully comprehend. And then the Dukkha Samudayam Arya Satchang Pahina or Pahatabba. That means you need to abandon the second noble truth. So second noble truth is the craving. So that craving has to be abandoned. So when we are looking at the mind, if there are desires arising, attachments arising, graspings happening, defilements are again and again visible, so then those defilements, those attachments, those desires have to be abandoned. So that is what we are actually, naturally it may happen actually, when you are doing Satipatthana practice, for example, while you are comprehending the whole different things, different phenomena. So natural effect is you become disenchanted about it, you become dispassionate about them. So this letting go become more and more natural, readily available. It is not kind of forceful letting go. Rather, you are slowly abandoning things now. So craving becomes less and less. Your desires become less and less. Graspings become less and less. Because you have a thorough understanding about things. We grasp things because we don't understand them properly. And we abandon, we let go things because we understood them properly. And then the third noble truth, Dukkha nirodhaṁ ariya satchaṁ satchikātaṁ va. You need to realize nibbāna. So that means time to time, say you are experiencing complete non-grasping state of the mind, which is not the fully fledged nibbāna. I mean, it is not that you immediately become an arahant. Rather, temporarily, your mind is completely free now. There is no any kind of conditioning. There is no any kind of defilement. There is no any kind of unsatisfactoriness. There is no any kind of craving. There is no any kind of stress or tension. Now mind is in a kind of a calm, relaxed, peaceful state. So that is a temporary nibbana, or we can say a conditioned kind of nibbana right now. But sometimes suttas mentioned as a tadanga nibbuti. So with the support of the insight knowledges, your mind is now free, enjoying kind of a freedom with the support of the wisdom gained through your practice, gained through vipassana insights. So that is a tadanga nibbuti. So time to time one may experience. So that has to be experienced, that has to be realized. So that realization has to be further expanded. Say for example, right now you are capable of maintaining your mind free from any defilement, free from any attachment, free from any grasping for 5 minutes. So realize, you are able to realize that, okay, temporarily for a short period, I am able to realize that non-attached or unattached, non-grasping, non-stressed state of mind. But you need to further realize it, you need to further expand it, you need to further experience it more and more. So in order to do that, you need to practice. You need to develop the morality, you need to develop the concentration, you need to develop the wisdom. So that is the Noble Eightfold Path. So that is the Fourth Noble Truth. The Fourth Noble Truth is something that we need to develop. Dukkha nirodha gamini patipada ariya satcham bhavetamba. So that is something you need to develop. So more and more you are developing, so more and more you are experiencing nibbana, more and more you are experiencing peacefulness, non-grasping state, unattached state, and tension-free state, spaciousness of the mind, freedom of the mind, because you are developing the path. So they are fairly interrelated, connected to each other, helping each other. Yeah. Back to you, Chamila.
Yes. Question number 4 of 6. This is a general question. Dear Bhante, appreciate if you can explain how Aswada, mind-made pleasures, adinava, bad outcomes, nisarana, relinquish, applicable to mindfulness practitioners. Maybe this might be applicable mainly to those who are not in the path. Thank you for your insights with metta. That's the end of the question.
I think they are applicable to, the practitioners mostly. We can't immediately say that we are not experiencing any kind of asada. Asada means the gratification. And the adinava means the danger. And the asada, adinava, then nisarana, that you are able to completely experiencing another state, which is kind of a freedom, as we just discussed, kind of a state which is completely free from such asada adinava. So these kind of things are actually practically one has to experience. Say for example, when you are doing mindfulness, it's at the beginning. Say your mind is distracted, you are experiencing various defilements, hindrances, and time to time you are going through sensual gratification, as we discussed. So, and it also has entailed some amount of gratification, sense pleasures. But at the same time, more and more your mind become more refined and sensitive, then you feel the grossness, you feel the heaviness of that kind of a gratification. Say you are going through a sensual gratification, say you are watching a movie which is quite exciting and giving a lot of sound and giving a lot of agitation, and you start boiling, you start feeling, you start agitated, then now you understand the danger of this kind of sense gratification. Very gross kind of a satisfaction. Gross kind of sense, handling the sense faculties. Now, as you understand the danger, slowly you are abandoning that because you have seen the adhinava, you have seen the danger. But still, probably you are not experiencing nisarana. Nisarana is where, as we just discussed, time to time you are experiencing complete freedom. So that becomes a temporary nibbana, temporary nisarana. So it is not the full-fledged nisarana. Nisarana is a synonym for nibbana. So now you know, okay, there is a place, there is a state of mind which is free from defilements, which is quite peaceful, which is free from attachment or grasping. So there is such kind of a state of mind that becomes your nisarana. Actually, very interestingly, we can explain that with respect to the, say, one sutta, Salla Sutta, where Buddha mentioned, say, certain, say, typical worldly beings when they are going through suffering. So what they want is sensual pleasure because they are going through some painful experience. Apart from sensual pleasure, they don't know anything else. So there are no other alternative. When they are going through some suffering, pain, etc., diseases, so what they are wishing for sense gratification. That's the only thing they know. But Buddha mentioned the practitioner, the noble person. So he too is sometimes going through pain. He too is going through suffering. He too is going through some disease. But his wish, his expectation is not the sensual gratification. Maybe the nisarana. He is now more trusting or maintaining that as a refuge, that nisarana state of mind, unattached state of mind, non-grasping state of mind, and he refers that as his refuge, not the sense gratification as his refuge. So there's a significant difference between these two approaches. So therefore, in our practice, asada adina nisarana is time to time that we are experiencing and again highlighting the path of nisarana.
Question numbers 5 of 7, these Dhamma Saman questions. Dear Bhante, can you explain some features and a way to identify a scattered mind? Is this the same or stemming from doubt with metta? That's the end of the question.
Yeah, stemming from doubt is one side of it. So when various doubts are there, your mind is scattered. You are thinking this, thinking that. You are in a complete perplexity, and there is no proper aim, and there is no proper direction, and there is no proper concentration or collectedness. Mind is jumping from this side, from into the another side. Mind is into one conclusion, another conclusion, one consideration, another consideration. This is also jumping. But on the other hand, another scattering is, say, you are becoming restless. So you can't keep your attention onto a selected object for a while. Rather, mind going to the past, going to the future, going to what you have seen, going to what you have heard. There is no proper behavior, tamed behavior of the mind. So this is also scattered mind. So this scattering or distractions can happen due to various reasons. And there may be slight differences from which it has happened. But anyway, the mind has scattered.
Question number 6 of 7. This is again a Dhamma Saman question. Dear Bhante, thank you for explaining the requisite of adjustments of lifestyle suitable for the path. We have seen this can sometimes block one starting the practice in fear of giving up the lavish lifestyles. Presume that this is the individual's karma and nothing much can be done. Much merits. That's the end of the question.
So don't be afraid. You can donate to Nisarnani if you like. So basically, it is not basic. Now say for example, say certain kings or certain merchants and certain say
rich people. They too have followed the path. It is not that they all became monks. Sometimes they do become monks, but there are still others who maintain a kind of a lay life, but still continued the path. But the interesting point is, so before you are practicing, expecting what you are going to do, actually is not the way, approach that you have to take. Because you don't know what's the kind of maturity that you are going to experience after some time. Say for example, today you are looking at your life from where you are right now. Say after another year, you are looking at your life from a different perspective, from a different angle. Say for example, say as young people, so we had certain likes and dislikes. Say we loved our friends, we love cricket, or we love various games, and we have different other desires. But when we become adults, we now have different styles, different likes, different approaches, different desires. So as children, what we had, what we have given priority, have completely changed. Now, if you are asking me, so that say I don't want to become an adult because I am going to lose my childhood desires. So is it a valid question? Because you need to understand, okay, I mean, as a child, I have a different way of looking at things. I have my own desires as a child. As an adult, I have another way of looking at things, and I have further desires, but now I may not be given certain importance as I did as a child. So likewise in our life, even you are practicing or not, even to mundane worldly things, we have different levels of desires at different levels of our different stages of our life. So that's a proper truth. So therefore our desires are changing, our attitudes are changing, our ambitions are changing, our priorities are changing. So same thing is true for the practice. So as you are continuing the practice, there is a kind of another depth coming to your mind, coming to your life, rather than simply going through a type of mundane, worldly, gratification based life. Now you are gaining another perspective, another dimension to your life. And with that kind of a dimension, okay, now what are your priorities? So therefore don't say, have misjudgments or wrong judgments about the practice. Rather, once you are going through, then allow yourself to decide. It is not that someone is forcing you to let go or to abandon. Rather, your mind will decide, your understanding will decide, your wisdom will decide what to do. It is not always a forceful thing. That's what even today what I have mentioned. So letting go process, abandoning process is not something forceful. It is more and more natural, and you may be happily doing it, and you are naturally doing it. It is something that you enjoy. So when you are giving up certain things, if you are enjoying it, you feel more lighter, you feel less heaviness. You become more and more lighter, your mind become free, your mind become brighter. So then what is the result? So the result is more positive. Result is more refreshing. Result is more encouraging. Yeah. You can go to the next question.
Question number 7 of 7. This is a general question. Dear Bhante, when I see all these questions requesting clarifications on Pali terms, I feel very backward. I'm just a mindfulness practitioner, but does not have that much knowledge of suttas or Pali terminology. How much of sutta teaching is needed for the practice? Do you think that my limited knowledge of suttas will hinder the practice? Much merits for your clarification. That's the end of the question.
Actually, there are, pros and cons of this. So if you are a learner, if you are a person who is more reading and more trying to learn Pali languages and trying to memorize things, so there are advantages and there are disadvantages as well. Advantage is that you are knowledgeable about the Dhamma, And if someone is telling something wrong, probably you know that is, I mean, what he is talking is wrong. You have a better understanding. So sometimes it becomes a helpful thing for you to maintain the faith, maintain the confidence about the Dhamma, because you know properly. You know the proper terms, proper explanations or proper definitions. But on the other hand, when you are doing your own practice, sometimes it can become a hindrance, because too much knowledge, too much book knowledge can try to interrupt your practice. And rather than giving more prominence to the direct experience, so time to time this book knowledge can come and interfere the practice. So that can become a hindrance as well. There are pros and cons of having book knowledge. And on the other hand, assume that you are continuing your practice without much bothering about the book knowledge as you are telling right now. So you need certain amount of guidance. And if that guidance is available, then you actually are continuing, you are maturing, and you may come to a certain age, a certain state, you don't have much Pali knowledge, you are in line with the suttas. So your experience is fairly in line with the suttas. And you may be hearing someone else is talking, you may be hearing a monk is talking, a Kalyanamitta is talking, and that Dhamma, what Buddha has explained in certain suttas, are fairly in line with what you are experiencing. You don't know much about the terminology, you don't know much about the Pali, suttas, etc. But the content of the sutta, the meaning of the sutta, is really matching with your experience. Then you feel delighted, you feel quite happy. Yes, why not? I am also experiencing the same thing. Buddha has mentioned the same thing. Buddha has explained the same thing. So that is the wonder, that is the beauty of the Dhamma. On the other hand, as you are more and more confident, as you are more and more mature, so you sometimes, if you have some time, actually you may start even learning Dhamma as well. Now actually you have already experienced some amount of experiential knowledge, Bhavanamaya Panya or meditative knowledge. Now probably you like to learn something more. You may start reading suttas and listening to Dhamma and start a little investigation, because you feeling more fond of the Dhamma. You feel more uplifted when you are hearing the Dhamma. You feel more confident when you are reading the suttas. So likewise, these are different approaches, so we can't have a clear-cut, hard and fast rule. So different people take different approaches. So without much book knowledge, you can continue your practice, and later you can investigate various books or sutta teachings as your desires with respect to that develop, or you feel that is relevant and encouraging. Now, on the other hand, you do at the beginning some amount of learning, and later you stop learning and you decide, okay, I need to practically experience these things, what suttas are explaining, rather than simply superficially memorizing them. Let me experience them, let me practice them, let me live according to them. So these different approaches are available.
Yeah, so that's the last question, Bante. So we've gone a little over time as well, so I think we can end the program now. To end the program, first I would like to thank Bante for his valuable time, and also to supporters of this program, both seen and unseen, and finally to the participants for joining the program today, practicing and sharing their questions. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Yeah, everyone's online.
Everyone's online.